1, 2.
Welcome to Two for the Road, movies with Matt and Adam.
I am Matt.
And I am Adam. We are a weekly movie pairing podcast. Every week we'll pick a theme, recommend a movie to the other guy that he has not seen based on that theme, watch, and discuss.
That's it.
That's it.
Except this week, got a little hitch in that.
A little bit of a wrinkle this week. Yeah. We wanted to watch a couple of movies that neither of us had seen,
right?
But that we were a little bit curious about different reasons.
Yes, because last week we did Good Cops, this week was Bad Cops. So
different kinds of bad cops. Yeah,
there are different kinds of bad cops.
Because we went into these movies blind,
right? Right.
We didn't know really what to expect. Just reading a Wikipedia entry doesn't really.
Especially the first one, I had no idea. Second one, we both read the book.
Yeah, but we'll get to that.
We'll get to that, yeah.
And also, before we get into it, if anyone listening to this wants to recommend any movies, we're always open to that. The email address is in the show description, but it's also number2, number4, fortheroad@gmail.com.
Right.
I'm Matt. So, yeah, bad cops. when we have a real bad cop, and when we have a bad cop who is,
You kind of understand a little bit.
It's the anti-hero.
Right.
I would contend not very actually good at police work.
No. No, it doesn't seem to be. No.
But I mean, good at killing.
Yeah. He's. I would say that.
I would say a confident and competent murderer.
Yeah.
So the first movie on the slate is 1997's
Fireworks. Takeshi Kitano, known as Beat, I believe. And I had heard that name for some, I can't figure out where I know that name from.
His name is Beat Kitano?
Beat, that's what he goes by.
Beat.
Beat.
So he wrote, directed, and starred in this movie.
And edited it. Yeah, he did everything.
Okay. So he's interesting.
Very interesting guy.
I did some light Googling about this guy. So apparently he came up in strip clubs, and he wanted to be a comedian, and he's done some weird. I mean, he wrote a movie called God, what's it called? It's from 1994. So after this, right? No, I'm sorry. Before this, he wrote a movie called Get Nanny.
Yeah,
which is about a kid who wants to get a car so he can have sex in it.
That's cool.
Obviously, Japanese movies have they have their Porkies and their meatballs their license to drive or whatever, but I never think about that, So, yeah, it's funny that he came up and he wrote a movie called Violent Cop before that. I mean, he's all over the place.
He is. He's done a lot. And he's actually known as Beat Takeshi.
Beat Takeshi.
Yeah, so he's. He's an artist, and I think that there's a lot of art in this film.
Yeah,
it must be his.
Oh, you think he did all the actual paintings?
I think so.
Okay,
I don't know. I know he's an artist, but maybe not that good.
Yeah. So in the movie, they feature paintings for I would say maybe it's a little bit too long.
Yeah.
And as I was watching, I was like, someone must have done these.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There must be a reason they're showing this.
Yeah. And I actually liked, I guess we'll get to it later, but there was one that I really liked. Mm-hmm. This is a movie about what is this movie about? Okay, well, let's back up a little bit.
Okay. Well, to be further on your point, what you just said about the camera lingered a little too long. Yeah, I think editing is not, he seems to be a good writer, good actor, good director, but editing maybe editing was a little spunky in this movie.
It was a little funky. Yeah. So, I guess we'll start there. When were you in?
Oh, I was in right away. I just, you know, Japanese cop movie starts out, you know, I jumped in right away. I actually watched this in one sitting. And again, I know I always say I don't normally do that. My brain sort of misfunctions after about 20 minutes and I have to go do something else for a while. But I actually sat here one afternoon and watched the whole thing. So I was in the whole way.
It's only like an hour and 35 minutes
or something. Yeah, but I know. But I just have trouble doing that these days. Most movies, like the next one, it took me about 10 sittings to see.
Yeah, the next one is a tough hang for sure. Yeah. Yeah, this movie, it kind of reminds, like, so about maybe, God, what's the, I'm 41 now. So maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, I went on this like real, this fairly deep Japanese literature kick, like contemporary Japanese literature.
Yeah.
And so I read a ton of stuff, mostly the Murakamis, but I read this book called Sayonara Gangsters. Mm-hmm. And this movie kind of reminded me of that because it's just like, it's like 2-page chapters and they're totally disconnected. And it's just like, here's an idea.
Yeah.
Okay, done with that. Forget everything you just read. Now here's something completely different. And so that's kind of how I felt about this movie.
It's hard to follow.
Right. It's like you don't really understand. I mean, you don't totally understand it until the end.
Right.
Right. And you're like, oh, okay. Now I get it.
Yeah. For as hard as it was to follow, I just kept following it. I was trying to concentrate. Well, okay, who's this now? Where are we now? What time? You know, because it seems to take place over a few months, I guess. In the end, yeah.
Yeah, because there's the only way we know time passing is that someone dies, someone's injured, or a couple people are injured. Mm-hmm. You know, one's paralyzed, and like they recover and they're out of the hospital. So it has to be weeks or months,
yeah,
maybe, months, right?
Probably, yeah.
Not totally sure.
Yeah, and then we go through the some of the characters struggle with what with their lives and stuff. So again, it's more time passed. I think it must have been a few months or something
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his wife is sick, right?
Right.
She doesn't have that long to live, so it can't be that long, right?
Right.
So you figure 4 to 6 months tops, yeah, if even that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this movie had a real slow ramp up. The beginning, you're in a car with like these detectives, and you don't even really, it's hard to even know who's talking, really, right? And maybe in I'm watching with subtitles, right? Mm-hmm. We both are, right? You're not fluent in Japanese as far as this.
No.
So maybe in like the original Japanese, it makes more sense. Like you can get a better sense of like who's who.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, who are these people? Like, who's this? Who's that guy?
And it takes about a half an hour for the star of the movie to say one word.
Right.
He doesn't say anything. I thought he was going to go the whole movie without saying anything.
I thought so, too.
That would have been pretty cool.
That would have been cool. But, yeah, so I was – so then they get to the hospital. It's just – and then suddenly there's violence, right? Someone gets shot. I was like, okay, now I'm in.
You
have my attention now. And so quick, and then they just go back to kind of
– I think that's mundane. What kept me interested was the strange form of this movie. Because it was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the editing, like I said, wasn't that great. The cuts, the timeline was all funky. But I just stayed interested in it. So I think I was more interested in the character, the lead character, than anything.
which is interesting because we get no character development.
Mm-mm.
We get barely any dialogue. Mm-hmm. I think the wife says nothing.
Right.
The main guy says 3 or 4 words,
right?
And
most of the other cops are doing all the talking.
Mm-hmm. And they're kind of filling in the gaps, but not really.
No.
You know, it kind of reminded me, like, okay, it's like a Tarantino movie, but take away the dialogue, take away the story, take away the character development, take away the action. Well, there's some action here. So it's just like, what are you left with? You're left with, like, just the in-between moments.
And then you add 80s television soundtrack, because that's what it sounded like. It's American.
I kind of like the soundtrack.
No, I liked it, but it just reminded me of something from a television show. Maybe 70s. I think 70s.
Hmm.
More, you know, like Rockford Files or something. You know, but I liked it. It fit. It worked for some reason.
It kind of made me think like. I know living in Japan, but it kind of gave me the vibe of like songs that like older women would sing to at like a Korean Noryabong or something, you know, like that kind of vibe. Definitely old fashioned.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. So go.
No, go ahead.
I was going to get into the plot. I'll try.
Okay.
Okay. So we have Nishi. He's our main. He's our hero, right? Mm-hmm. And he... So I don't know. Should I explain this how the movie says it, or should I just do it linearly? You know, I mean, because the movie is not linear, and you don't really know.
You better what do happened. It just linearly.
Linearly, okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah, literally.
So our main guy Nishi, he's you know they're I guess they're like on a stakeout or something, mm-hmm. and but his wife is sick.
Leukemia.
Yeah, she has leukemia. So all the detectives on the stakeout are like, hey, why don't you haven't seen your wife in a while.
Right. And he's lost his daughter. She died a few months before that. His 5-year-old daughter or something.
Right. No. So why don't we, because he's really good friends with his partner, mm-hmm. Haribe.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And like Haribe named his daughter after Nishi.
Right.
Right. So that's how close they are. And so he's like, hey, we'll drop you off at the hospital while we're on our stakeout. No big deal. You can go up and say hi to your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a weird insight into Japanese culture. Is that how that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean,
somebody has to tell you to go visit your sick wife.
I mean, I don't know about you. I got the vibe that he hadn't seen his wife in days or weeks.
That's what I thought.
You know?
I thought he wasn't going.
Right. And so he shows up. They don't speak to each other.
Nothing.
Very hard to read their relationship at that point. Mm-hmm. We get some more insight later. And while he's visiting, someone gets shot. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. One of the cops.
When the cops get shot
on the stakeout, he's with a doctor, and he gets a call just that his partner's been shot or something.
Yeah, doctor's like, you should probably just take your wife home. Nothing we can do here.
Yeah,
he finds out his partner gets shot. So then, in the movie, flash forward, but so linearly, they're like at a subway station hit with the other cops. They're like, mm-hmm. oh, there's the guy that shot our the guy in our crew. So he lunges at him. Again, bad police work.
Right, right. He comes out of, he's in a little, like a little booth or something.
Uh-huh.
The guy's buying a magazine or something, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he comes flying at it. Bad cop.
Yeah, we get like a pretty interesting view of the Yakuza in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like low level like New Jersey mafia types, right?
They got
tracksuit or whatever, silly hair, and so yeah, this guy has a gun. They know that, and he shoots, and he, you know, it paralyzes one guy.
Kills another guy,
mm-hmm. and then these cops' lives kind of unravel, right? Haribe is paralyzed. He's mm-hmm. in a wheelchair.
Yep.
Not super stoked about that.
No. Nope.
His wife and kid leave him.
Yes.
Unclear why, right?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know anything about these people.
Right. There's backstory, good luck.
Right.
So I got the sense that, so I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if it was in Japanese culture, if, you know, if you're a husband and you're paralyzed, you're no longer the breadwinner. You're maybe seen as less of a man. Maybe they'd be better off somewhere else. But also, he didn't seem like father of the year. Like,
No.
He refers to his wife as a dog in the opening, you know, few sentences of the movie.
And he's supposed to take his kid to the park, and he calls her up, saying, "Can't do it." Doesn't seem to feel any remorse about it or anything. You know?
Right. So maybe he's not the best guy.
No.
And then Tanaka was killed. Mm-hmm. We get to see Tanaka's wife. She's took up a job, and you know, yeah, she's just doing her best. And we find out that Nishi, our main dude, he is let go of the. He's fired, I guess,
because he unloaded his gun into the corpse of the bad guy. Which I guess you're not supposed to do.
Probably not. there's probably something in the policeman's handbook in Japan that has it. And so, you know, we just their lives are in sort of like disarray, but. I mean, it seems like they're just doing the same old thing. You don't get a sense of that. Like, it's hard to gauge what's actually happening until later, right? You're always playing catch up as like the audience. So he's borrowing money from the Yakuza, so he can pay for his wife's hospital bills. He's buying paints for Haribe so he can kind of cheer up a little bit.
Right.
He's taking care of Tanaka's widow. He's kind of overextending himself.
Right.
And so he comes up with a plan to get the money.
To rob a bank.
Yeah, decides to rob a bank. So we get this bumbling, or I don't know if he's bumbling, we get this junkyard man.
He's bumbling in certain ways, other ways. You know, he's just a junkyard guy. He's going to make a buck on everything.
He's got his daughter who's huffing glue. just a nice detail. So he buys an old taxi, paints it like a cop car, gets the siren and everything, rolls up into a bank. the most chill bank robber you've ever seen.
Never seen anything like it. Everybody's looking. Nobody really seems to know what's going on. He just hands the woman, and it's wide open. It's like, you know, we see the, which, you know, I'll bring up, well, I was going to bring up later, but that was one of my favorite scenes where you just see it on the bank cameras. You're seeing the robbery. So you're just like wide open. People are just kind of staring at him. And he just...
Yeah, a couple of people know what's going on, but everyone else is just oblivious, right? They're right, just like, right. Oh, I got to get my work done by 5:30 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I thought they were going to show the whole thing through the eye of the camera. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah.
I'm glad they cut a little bit to like, you know,
the real
movie mode or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he gets away scot-free.
Yeah, he drives the cop car. All the other cops are going one way. He's going the other.
Mm-hmm. Pays a Yakuza.
Mm-hmm.
He's good. And just decides to travel the country with his wife.
Yep, that's what he robbed it for, so he could spend time with his wife. And they go on this little trip where they're just doing goofy little things. Nothing major.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of cool.
She wanted to see snow, so he took her to see snow.
Yeah.
And the Yakuza realizes that he did this. They want to get more money out of him. They want to extort him.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of chasing him.
Yeah.
And the other detectives the surviving detectives, they're like, okay, he did this. We got to go get him.
Yeah.
So there's kind of this, they're all after him, but there's no suspense. there's no chase.
The Yakuza is
Yakuza.
Yakuza. Yeah, they're just bad at what they do. They're just bumbling. Yeah, you know, they're not very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they get there first. He handles them very quickly.
Yep.
They come again, handles them more violently, kills them all,
leaves them in a parked car.
And then it leads us to our final scene is he's at the beach with his wife, and there's this young girl with a kite.
Kite.
Just... He rips it in half. Accidentally?
I don't know.
Intentionally? The last scene is kind of a head-scratcher for me.
I don't think it belonged in the movie. The little girl did not belong in that scene.
And then the detectives show up, and he's like, give me a minute. He walks over to his wife. The screen pans over, and we hear two gunshots.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're left wondering, did he kill himself and his wife, or did he kill the two detectives?
His wife and himself, I believe. Yeah, but why do it in front of the little girl? That's what I didn't get.
Yeah, because the last shot is like her just looking surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it, right?
Yeah. Strange movie.
Pretty
but
strange.
But I really liked it for some reason. You know?
I really liked it too.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how it was completely deconstructed.
Right.
Like, I was watching this, like, what is even happening? You know, like, I mean, you can follow every scene. It's like someone took a bunch of sentences
mm-hmm.
and just, or took a paragraph and just cut up all the sentences and put them in a different order. It's like, yeah, just figure it out.
Right. And it's like, you have so little information about these people and what's going on that it just keeps your interest, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. I would say, so... Usually you think like, oh, you know, you need like well-developed characters. You need like a clever, intricate plot to draw you in. This one was like,
yeah,
well, I'll do the opposite.
It's the opposite of the next movie we saw
mm-hmm.
where there's, I don't want to get into it too much, but there's a lot of, too much information almost.
Right.
Yeah. And it's handed to you like here.
Right.
If you haven't been following, here's some, you know. But this has no information. You know, it's so sparse.
Mm-hmm. Which makes you pay more attention.
Right.
And it makes you kind of fill it in yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, I wonder why he's doing that. Let me really think about it. Let me really consider this person's perspective or situation.
And Nishi, our bad cop, when we said bad cop, we didn't know. We're literally meaning a bad cop. He's not a very good cop.
I mean, seems like a pretty decent guy. Very good at killing.
Right.
That's one thing we didn't mention. I mean, there's lots of like really quick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he jabs this guy in the eye with chopsticks. Yeah,
didn't
see that coming.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He's just there's
he's a badass.
There's flashes of intense brutality,
mm-hmm.
and then the next scene is like he's playing on with a puzzle with his wife. You
right.
know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what a lot of it. What kept my interest was Nishi himself. He's like I say, he maybe three or four words the whole movie he says, mm-hmm. and but he's got this like look on his face, like he's just down, he's beaten,
he's beat Takashi, right?
And he has a little tick,
yeah,
his little, you know, reminds me of a guy I used to work with, and he used to get upset, you'd see that little tick. You know, it was kind of cool. A cool acting thing. Unless he really has that, I don't know. Maybe.
And he's got a good look with like kind of a, I don't want, you know, just this man's appearance, but kind of a big kind of face. Mm-hmm. But these little sunglasses that somehow fit perfectly.
Right, right.
You know, like right. It seemed iconic. And I don't know if it is in Japanese culture, but it just, that's a look you're not going to forget.
He rarely looks at the camera. He's always like looking down or looking around, you know. So it's yeah. He's got that kind of face. You're going, what's going through his mind, you know? So, anyways, yeah. I really, really like this movie.
Is he very complicated, or is he just a dodo who knows how to kill? Hard to say, right?
Maybe a little both.
So I mean, that brings it to who stole it. It has to be him, right?
Yes, right.
I mean, he again, very little dialogue, but just his presence.
He's every scene. You're just watching him because you don't know. You're not hearing him.
No, you're definitely not hearing him.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so, and also, we already mentioned the Yakuza. Mm-hmm. I thought they were kind of a funny group. You can see their hierarchy a little bit. I don't know, kind of interesting the way they yep. portrayed them. Yeah. Matt, I do not have an Oh, It's That Guy.
I don't have any of that either.
I was looking at some of the actors and actresses in this, and they've done a bunch of stuff, but obviously nothing that I've seen, nothing I'm aware of. Lines? Did this movie have lines? Was there dialogue?
I don't think I had any lines. Yeah.
Yeah, I would just say, I guess the only one for me would be, there's two. One's kind of funny. When he first goes out to see Haribe and he's in the wheelchair and they're by the sea and he's like, yeah, I don't know, maybe I'll take up painting and I don't know. And he's like, maybe I'll buy a beret.
And later on, Nishi sends him painting and beret.
So that was kind of funny. And then at the end, I think like there's a scene where, at the very end, we already mentioned with the girl running around. And the detectives walk up and, you know, one of them is looking at the couple. And he says, I could never live like that. Yeah. And it's like, I didn't know if he's talking about the girl running around like a, you know, kind of Pollyannish. Like, she's running around with a broken kite. But she's still happy.
Right, right.
Does he mean I couldn't live like that? Or does he mean I couldn't live like this miserable couple who's, or, you know, with your wife who's dying and driving around the country? It's unclear what he meant. Yeah. But, like, it was so ambiguous, it makes you kind of consider all possibilities.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
Could have been anything.
Any scenes that you want to touch on?
Not really, I don't think. How about you?
I like the, you didn't like the last scene. I kind of like the last scene with the little girl.
Mm-hmm. I just thought I would have been better if she wasn't in it. I don't know. It just because the ending kind of reminded me of something from, you know, French New Wave or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's just at the end, somebody's just staring. Kind of thing. Yeah. I never thought of that until now. So
I think there was a lot of French New Wave in this, right?
Yep.
I mean, just the way it was cut and the way it all added up.
Yeah.
So Matt, sometimes we talk about the direction. I'm thinking about maybe framing this a little bit differently. What would a community college film professor say about this movie?
I don't know. I think the one I had would have loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think we've already touched on it. Like, there's nothing here, right? There's no, like, it's an anti-movie movie.
This is not How to Make a Film 101.
Well, I think it's like, well, what can you do without all that stuff?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, I mean, this would be a perfect movie that could be filmed during the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. Every scene has like one or, you know, two or three people at the most in a room.
Yeah.
Or these like kind of like wide open spaces. It was just, there's a lot with a little.
Mm-hmm.
No character development, no exposition. There's barely a plot, barely a dialogue.
My boy Roger Ebert, the first paragraph of his review is, it has been said that Western art is the art of putting in and Eastern art is the art of leaving out. The new Japanese film Fireworks is like Charles Bronson's Death Wish movie, so drained of story, cliche, convention, and plot that nothing is left except pure form and impulse. Not a frame, not a word is excess. Takeshi Kitano, who made it, must be very serene or very angry. Only extreme states allow such narrow focus.
Yeah, I like the idea that there's no convention, there's no cliche. We don't get any of those, like all those moments you just kind of assume they're all happening. We just don't see it.
Maybe that's one reason I was so interested in, because everything I saw was new, or it seemed new. Mm-hmm. There was no cliche.
Like, we don't get Haribe and his wife having a big blow-up fight, or say, I can't live like this anymore. You know, we don't get that.
They only say, like, five words.
We don't get the chief of police, you know, dressing down Nishi, saying, like, give me your badge, you're out of here, you're a loose kid. We don't see any of that.
We just find out he's gone. Because some cop says he mentioned, some other cop says he emptied his gun in his corpse. We don't know that. Mm-hmm. We would have known. You know, if that cop had not mentioned that, we wouldn't have known if he was still in the force or not, probably.
Right.
There was never any mention.
Right.
You know. So.
Yeah, he handles himself the same, whether he's a cop or not.
Right.
So that maybe that's a problem. But yeah, it's very minimal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. And so you mentioned the editing. Mm-hmm. What rubbed you raw about the editing?
Well, I think a part of it is that he stayed too long in some of the scenes. You know, probably could have been 5-8 minutes shorter if he just cut a little here and there. And it seemed a little rough sometimes. It seemed to jump from one thing to another, and you don't really know. Okay, it took me a few seconds to figure, okay, where are we? What's going on? So, how about you?
I mean, I would agree with you. I think I agree with your assessment, but I think that is the point.
Yeah,
I think it's supposed to be a little bit jarring. I think it's supposed to be like, hey, film viewer, catch up.
Yeah,
you know, you'll get it eventually.
Life
you know?
Is confusing.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, it's like you're just being thrown into the situation. You don't know what's happening.
Right,
you have to sort of rely on these little clues that people are giving you to sort of piece it together, which, again, as we mentioned, like kind of draws you in even more, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a recast.
Okay.
There's only one person in the modern American cinema that could pull this off.
All right. Let's hear it.
Michael Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
He's intense.
Yep.
I think he could be sweet. I don't know if I've ever really seen that in his movies. But he's got a similar head.
I'm trying to think. I've seen him in a lot of movies I didn't know it was him, you know, until later. I'm like, oh, that's that guy that's in everything now.
Yeah, he's great, though.
He's very good.
He plays a very good man without remorse.
Right.
That's how I would put that.
Yeah.
You have any lingering questions?
Nope. How about you?
Well, I mean, just at the end. I mean, are we supposed to wonder who got shot? I mean, why? I mean, they pan away, and the music starts playing, and you think it's over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I was in theater, I'd probably be like halfway out the door before you hear the gunshot. It's like, wait, what? So, I mean, that must have been intentional. So, do you think we're supposed to? Do you think it's supposed to be an open question?
No, I didn't think it at all. I was positive that he went and shot his wife and then shot himself. And that was the whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I never thought he shot the other two cops. He was a bad cop, but he wasn't a bad cop when it came to other cops.
Right, he's not going to kill a cop.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even for his wife?
No.
What did you take of their relationship? What did you make of that? We didn't talk about that at all, between him and his
wife. I think their relationship died with the kid.
Yeah.
And now she's dying, and he got nothing else. He's not a cop anymore. He's, you know, his partner is in a wheelchair. He's got nothing. I don't know. They're just kind of hanging on. You know, I think maybe at one time they were in love, or, you know, because they had some nice moments on their little trip, you know, where they finally get to see some laughter and think, you know, they were funny together. But I just think that, you know, when the kid died, that either that maybe their relationship was already on a, you know, downward spiral or something, but that's what happens when children die in marriages. So,
yeah, I don't know. In the beginning, you kind of get a sense that they're totally disconnected, but there's a couple scenes like, you know, like she takes his piece of cake and she's like, you know, it's like, I'm dying. Like, I'm eating all the cake, you know? And then when they're traveling around, there's a lot of scenes of her giggling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that she ever says anything. I don't think she ever does. So I was just trying to figure out their dynamic. Like, he gets something out of taking care of her, and she appreciates that. I couldn't really figure out how we were supposed to view that dynamic.
Yeah, it's ambiguous.
And they play that weird puzzle game, which doesn't seem that complicated. I'm like, you can't make the five, bro. You can't just figure this one out. It's a piece right there. Just put it together anyway.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. That and the artwork.
I like the art. So,
oh, I love the artwork.
The artwork wasn't really my thing, but there was that one painting with, it's got like the word for, I think, snow and light a bunch of times, and the word for suicide. I like that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, no, I wouldn't buy it, but I thought it was pretty cool that it was in there, you know. And were we supposed to believe that his ex-partner's painting these, or?
I think so. Either painting them or well, the ones that he's in front of, like pointillism stuff, obviously he's doing that. But maybe just conceptualizing.
I think he's conceptualizing.
Like he's like, oh, if I was a painter, I might do something like this. But then when he actually paints, it's just people with their backs to the viewer, and he's, you know, doing the pointillism, which I would contend is the most
lazy man.
It's the laziest art of all time, right? Pointillism, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it also speaks to, I mean, this movie is just a bunch of little points. Yeah. It's not all connected, and they all kind of fill into making it, you know.
Yeah. And you talk about those puzzles, they're all somehow get pieced together, and they make different, you know, puzzles and stuff. Yeah. Everything, this whole movie's a puzzle.
So before we get into guessing the scores, so I was trying to like look into, so this won a few awards. What am I looking at right now? So it won the Venice Film Golden Lion, which, you know, I'm not big on all the awards, so I know that's
big.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
It wasn't even nominated. It wasn't even submitted by Japan for the Academy Awards that year. Japan submitted, which is probably the most well-known movie of all these movies on the submitted movies, Princess Mononoke, which is an animated movie, which I've never seen, but I know it's beloved.
Either. Yeah.
And the like the movie that won, so it was also submitted to the like Chicago Film Festival, and it lost to Life is Beautiful. Of course. Hey, it's Life is Beautiful. What are you gonna do?
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Life is Beautiful? Mm-mm. Really?
I was turned off by all.
Too much hype.
I don't know, and I like him. Benigni, but I've never seen. I don't know. Maybe it's the whole. I don't know.
Wow, that's really surprising.
I'm surprised I haven't seen it.
I mean, I saw it as a teenager, and I liked it probably like even more now. But yeah, it's a good movie. All right, Matt, you want to guess the scores?
Sure.
All right, so IMDb, what do you think? We got 29,000 people checking in.
I'm gonna go 7.5. I think it's over our threshold.
You went low.
Really?
7.8.
Wow.
I think that's proper.
Yeah. I think so, too. I wasn't sure how to react.
I might even go 8-0 on this. Because you've never seen a movie like
this. This is unique. It's a unique film.
It's unique, but also it's not like the uniqueness is not what makes it good. Mm-mm. It's actually good.
Yes.
Like it keeps your attention.
Right.
The main character is interesting, if still kind of confounding. Right. But yeah, it's a...
I agree with you. I think this movie should be highly rated.
I agree. And it's so, yeah, like, I mean, we keep saying it's unique, it's different, but that's all you can think when you watch it.
Without being totally weird and not, you know, probable or something, you know, some movies you watch, oh, that was weird, but that was just weird.
Right. Right. It's not just weird for being weird. It's actually a good, and I didn't realize that the star was the writer and the director until I don't know, about an hour ago. All right, Matt, what do you think about Rotten Tomatoes? The tomato meter, 24.
I'm gonna go high, 95.
96.
96. Yep. Cool.
And what do you think about the audience?
I'm gonna go 90.
93.
See?
Pretty well reviewed.
How
movie.
Many people reviewed it?
Let's see. On Rotten Tomatoes, over 10,000. That's kind of what they kept it at. So this was my favorite review. Let's see, where is it? Okay, this is from City Pages, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Compared to, the main guy, Takeshi Kitano, Bruce Willis is a wimp, Harrison Ford is a creep, and Mel Gibson is a joke.
That's one of the best reviews I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's
fabulous.
Yeah, it's fabulous. I mean, just... I guess when I was watching, I wasn't even really comparing him to Hollywood stars and this type of role, you know, like the tough guy protecting his woman, taking on the mafia, the rogue cop, that kind of thing. But those are some of the dudes who'd be in that role and blows them out of
everybody
the water.
Everybody underestimated him. That he was just some guy and he took care of business very quickly.
There's a scene I forgot to mention when the Yakuza guy, again, I couldn't tell in the Yakuza who was the boss and who wasn't, right?
The one not saying anything is the boss.
So there's a scene where this guy in like an all white suit, was he the boss or not?
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
So
he was the next up.
So he follows up, our hero and puts a gun in his face and, our boy doesn't even flinch. And he cocks it, the gun was empty, so he clicks it, doesn't even flinch, and just looks at him, just kind of shrugs and walks away. And then the guy does that same thing again with a different person and shoots him in the face. Right. So was that guy just kind of playing Russian roulette, or was he just testing the first guy and knew he was going to kill the second guy?
I don't think he gave a damn.
Who? The Yakuza guy?
Yeah. No.
But I'm saying the Yakuza guy, what was he doing? The first time it clicks, right?
Like,
he knows it's empty. The second time he knows it's loaded and kills him. Does he know, or is it just like a game of chance? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. No, you asked, I don't remember. And then there's another time somebody puts a gun in his face and he sticks his finger in the...
in like the hammer?
Yeah, the hammer, and he can't shoot.
He squeezes it? Yeah.
That was cool. I like that.
There were a couple cool things that you've never seen on film, right? Like the chopsticks to the eye. That's a cool moment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this movie would have... I don't know. If you're interested in film, you got to watch this movie. If you're interested in, like, a different take on kind of violent crime/gangster movies, you got to watch this movie.
I think so. This is a must-see if you're into film. Yeah, and we don't watch enough Japanese films anyway. So.
No, I mean, we should watch more foreign stuff, but it's...
It's kind of hard.
I mean, it's, you've seen so much, it's hard for me to recommend stuff. All right, so you want to take a break and we'll come back and talk about The Killer Inside Me?
Yes.
Second movie of the week is 2010's The Killer Inside Me, based on what Matt considers to be a wonderful book.
I read it a long time ago. A wonderful, you're right.
Right.
It's an interesting book. By Jim Thompson.
Yeah, I would say it's very interesting. I'd say it's important. I mean, well written.
Yeah. He was a well-read writer. I mean, he wrote The Getaway, a bunch of really kind of interesting pulp fiction kind of books.
Yeah, I mean, this is not like a feel-good book, right?
No, hell no.
it's not like a guide on how to be a human being.
Right. And this is the second version of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Stacy Keach had made another one.
Yeah, I regret not watching the Stacy Keach one. When we were debating which one to watch... This one was rated more highly on IMDb, which is a terrible way to go by things, but that's all we had, right?
Let's go back and watch that then sometime.
I don't know, man.
Our theme will be garbage movies.
garbage original? I don't know.
Garbage original.
I don't know if I want to spend any more time in this world, to be quite honest.
All right.
As we alluded to, this movie was a bit of a tough hang.
It's terrible.
Yeah. So after I watched this movie, I was like, did I actually read that book? Like, did I finish it? I thought I had, because it's not a very long book. Mm-hmm. But about halfway through, I was like, this seems really unfamiliar. I don't know if you had the same sensation.
I couldn't remember. Little bits and pieces, I remember him going to Houston or something in the book, you know, somewhere, and then, you know, a little bit here and there. But, you know, at the end, I'm going, I don't remember reading that book.
This is one of the worst endings. We'll get to it. This is one of the worst endings of any movie we've watched.
Yeah,
it might be the worst. I mean, there's that one Korean movie. Wow, what's it called? Vertigo?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where they end in like, okay, that's probably the worst.
Yeah.
This is number two.
This is.
Or 1B.
This is terrible.
Terrible ending.
And it's befitting for the movie.
So this is directed by Michael Winterbottom, who's done a bunch of stuff, and I don't know his stuff.
None of it seems to be all that great.
Well, okay, I would say the direction was fine.
It was fine.
Like, it's competent. It's written by a guy named John Curran. He's not written anything after this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, this is a screenplay based on the Jim Thompson novel.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of his one shot in the
minor
leagues, buddy.
He's a dog.
Yeah. Like, how do you turn in such a crappy script when you have excellent source material?
You're pretty bad at your job, I guess.
Or maybe you're feeling yourself a bit too much.
Maybe the director changed it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It wasn't. I mean, you had a lot to work with this movie. You had a good book.
Uh-huh.
You had some very good actors in it. Ned Beatty's in it. You know, Casey Affleck. Maybe wrong choice.
Okay, so let's go there. Usually we go like, who stole it? I think this is the rare case. Okay, we need to think of a name for this phenomenon. I have a possible name.
Okay.
This is the rare case where the supporting cast far outshine the star.
Right.
And I'm going to call this the Frasier.
Okay.
If you think of something better, we can go with that.
Okay.
But he was just... He
sleptwalked through that whole film.
He didn't do anything good, right?
Huh.
So as far as I understand, or as far as I remember the book, the appeal of this character is that Casey Affleck has this line where he's like, I got feet on both sides of the fence, right?
Right.
He's like this good, clean cut kind of cop.
Everybody looks at him as clean cut.
Okay. Casey Affleck did not pull that off.
No.
But also he's like this dark and violent person,
mm-hmm.
like American Psycho-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't pull that off.
No.
So it's like, I don't think you've ever played Dungeons and Dragons.
No.
Okay. Well, when you play Dungeons and Dragons, you make your characters and you give attributes like strength, charisma, mm-hmm. whatever. And typically you want to have a few high and a few low so you're good at something.
Mm-hmm.
He's like just flat line across everything.
Nothing.
He's average.
And I've liked him in stuff, you know, Manchester by the Sea.
Okay.
He was great in that.
That is the rare exception.
Right.
Where his mumbling, stumbling weirdness fit that character, right?
Right.
That's like Vince Vaughn in Swingers. It's like
the only thing he's ever done.
It's like a perfect match.
It is.
I think it's the only thing he's ever
done. No, I know. I'm not serious about it. But yeah, he's done a lot of crap, but that movie is him.
Right. It's like it's this perfect pairing.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I can say, okay, again, I'm going to make another comparison that maybe you don't know. Are you familiar with the band Imagine Dragons?
I've heard a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so they had like a 4-year run where they were everywhere.
Right.
Like I don't think they did the Super Bowl, but they almost did. Like they're doing like, you know, big shows, award shows.
Every time I turn on 104.7, they were on.
Right. But I've never met anyone who likes them.
I don't.
That's Casey Affleck. It's like he had this run where he was everywhere, and you're like, wow, how is this dude in movies?
Right.
You're the Imagine Dragons of acting.
Yes.
And now he's had a bunch of sexual assault things. So he's whatever. But just like, Manchester by the Sea, love the movie. He was great in it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else.
Right.
I mean, he was okay in Good Will Hunting. It's like the annoying younger brother.
Yeah.
He had a couple lines. But other than that, like, he's...
Yeah, I mean, even in the one about Billy the... Was it Billy the Kid or...
Oh, The Assassination. Yeah,
Jesse James. Yeah. You know.
I haven't seen that.
No. Well, he was, you know, he was okay. It wasn't great. You know?
And his Texas accent?
Yeah.
Has he been to Texas? All right, so Matt... When were you in?
Never.
At all?
No, I just
start to finish, nothing?
Yeah, I was just, the whole thing, just, from the very beginning, I was just annoyed, I think. I don't know. Maybe it was him. Casey Affleck. I don't know.
Not even Bill Pullman could pull you out?
Well, that was at the end of the movie, and he had a, you know, he was funny when he came into the hospital, but you know, but he was there 3 minutes mm-hmm. the most. So, I mean, they got a lot of good people in this. Jessica Alba was, you know, she's good.
What was she doing in this movie?
I don't know.
Why was she in this movie?
I don't know. And Kate Hudson.
Why was she in this movie?
Right.
I mean, I guess, okay, so I guess we'll, I would, okay, so I was in, well, I'll tell you when I was in, we'll go through it. So the plot real quick, a cop goes to, so Affleck is the cop,
mm-hmm.
he goes to run a whore out of town, that's mm-hmm. Jessica Alba. You ever seen a prostitute that looks like Jessica Alba? I don't think I have.
No, not in a, not in an old shack in West Texas or wherever they were.
I mean, Jessica Alba is arguably one of the most beautiful women
in beautiful.
Hollywood, like naturally beautiful of like right. the last, I don't know, mm-hmm. 50 years.
Right.
So she's the prostitute. They fall in love through S&M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. She starts slapping around and wakes something up inside of him and he remembers his mother. Which is...
Which maybe was interesting, but we got very little of that, right?
Right. Right.
It's just like, yeah, there's this childhood thing. Anyway,
yeah.
It's like,
this
okay,
is why he is like he is.
Show me more of that. Like, you alluded to this earlier. Like, don't have a character come in and just, like, you know, give me, like, the Law and Order spiel. Like, just in case you're coming in and you missed the first 20 minutes, let me just run down what's been happening.
Right, right.
Like, I don't need that. Like, no. Don't, I'm not a dummy, right?
Right. Right.
I just figured out fireworks, you know? So we got a land developer. His son's involved. Oh, the land developer son. I thought maybe he stole it. He was good. He's Stan from Mad Men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's good in everything.
He's good. He's very good.
He needs more work.
He wasn't in it long enough to really kind of make that good of an impression. But
I just want to say I'm riding for that dude. That dude needs more work.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out if I can find his name real quick. J.R. Ferguson. Yeah, get that dude more work. Anyway, so we got a land developer son's involved with the woman. There's a plot to pay her off, so she leaves town. I guess this is what you do, like, with a prostitute. You pay him to go somewhere else. And by the way, go ahead.
No, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and finish what you were going
to
say.
Well, I was going to change to the prostitute's house.
Okay.
Pretty nice.
Pretty nice for being out in the middle of nowhere in West Texas, you know.
Yeah, like she decorated, right. You know. It's not a fly-by-night operation.
Yeah.
I expected, like, a mattress and, like, a waffle iron, right. You know.
And this was 50s.
Uh-huh.
Circa 50s. And Ned Beatty's given her 10 grand to leave?
That's
a good chunk of change. That's almost like too much. It's like, come on, don't you know when this is? You could get away with it for five.
Yeah, 10 is your opening offer.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe start with 2 and work your
way up. Yeah. I don't know. It just didn't make sense.
So there's a plot to pay her off. We find out that he's also dating, or Affleck's also dating Kate Hudson, which it's like, go ahead.
No, I just thought she was too old for the part.
Well, I mean, you got Kate Hudson.
Right.
And the only woman, I guess, that could draw you away would be Jessica Alba, right? I
mean, right.
It's like these beautiful women in the small town. Just anyway, so then he kills them both. There's this really brutal scene where he's punching her,
mm-hmm.
which was like, went on a little too. I mean, I understand the point was to make us uncomfortable, but mm-hmm. God damn, like.
Ugh. There was some brutal scenes in this movie. Uh-huh. I mean, over the top brutal scenes.
Yeah, it's him beating women.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
very unnerving.
There's two of them, and they're both like, fuck. So then so he kills them both. He kills like the land guy's son. He's a suspect, kinda. So this is something that I think the movie was trying to get across the idea that the town kind of knew that he was a bad person. But they weren't willing to take that final step to accuse him.
Right.
I think that's what they were going for, but it just didn't land.
I thought in the beginning everybody thought he was a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're starting to suspect something's up because, Jesus, people just die around him
mm-hmm.
for some reason.
Right.
You know, and they're not sure. I think it started out he was a good person, and then they weren't sure. And then as the bodies and everything got higher, I think they all made up their mind that he was not a good person.
But I feel like they made up their mind, like you mentioned, when they go to Houston, it seemed like his partner knew when he was like, Blotto.
Yeah.
Like he knew that, I know you're the killer. It's kind of like what he, what did he say? It's lightest before dark.
He flipped the phrase around. Yeah.
And then a kid is kind of involved. He kind of knows he had some money from the payoff. So Affleck goes to visit the kid. Okay, this didn't make sense. So he hangs the kid in the cell while there's a guard outside and there's no sound. The kid's not like, hey, don't hang me. What are you doing? Help. I mean,
nobody checks on him for hours and hours. You're not bringing this guy dinner or something?
Right.
Yeah, that was another
little bit of
a... I remember that from the book where he did that. But it didn't seem real then either. I mean, you hang somebody in a jail and they don't make any noise or nothing. Yeah.
So then Affleck is getting blackmailed by a bum. And this is actually when I was in, not when he's being blackmailed, but the original time he meets this bum. He's walking out. Affleck seems like a good guy. Yeah, he's got this S&M thing going, but okay, whatever. It's Jessica Alba. What are you going to do? So then he sees this bum on the street and he puts his like cigar out in his hand.
Right.
Look, I've been on a hell of a binge. And if I don't get some food in me pretty soon, I'm just going to kill over here, you know?
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Need something to warm you up, huh?
Oh, anything. Just anything at all.
Yeah.
Ah! Oh, Jesus, bud. What the hell are you trying to do with that, huh?
See that? That's a real-life sheriff's badge.
Sure.
Beat it.
Sure, bud. Sure. I'm going. You better watch it with that stuff, bud.
You think so?
You just better watch it.
You know, any of these movies where you have like a psychopath, when they start doing things out in the open, you know, it's like starting to unravel.
Right.
So that's when it gets a little bit interesting. Yep. So for me, that was like, okay, now we're...
That was an interesting. And it introduced us to Brent Briscoe, the actor who is one of those guys you see in a lot of films. And you go, oh, that guy.
Right. And so, yeah, he was good. And so he's getting blackmailed by the bum. Affleck. And here's another thing that wasn't really explored. Like Affleck starts having this urge to kill his fiance. He says, when I close my eyes or whatever, like I just see it. I just know I have to do it. Like that kind of dark, like inner darkness, right? That American Psycho / Dexter-ness never really gets explored. Like they don't ever really explain it. Just he.
It's all blamed on his mother.
Right. Kinda.
Kinda.
Not really.
His fetish for violence.
And his mother wants him to slap her ass like that.
Right.
So he decides he's going to kill his fiance. Again, another hard to watch scene. He punches her to death. This guy doesn't have a knife. He kills the bum on a public street because the bum sees it.
Finally, he didn't kill it. Somebody else, the other sheriff.
Oh, you're right. He's chasing him.
He's yelling, murderer, murderer. And the guy shoots him.
Finally, the town is like, okay.
Not for this.
Right. We've reached our limit. We're trying to look the other way, but you're making it hard. So he gets arrested. He gets put in the loony bin. My next note is just Bill Pullman, 3 exclamation points.
Right. Yeah. Always good.
Yeah. He shows up. Like, probably the best scene is them driving, right? Like more of that, right? That's what is needed. Like, I don't know if Bill Pullman should have been his partner. I don't know what could have fixed it.
Pullman might have been better as the union guy,
maybe,
because that's Elias Koteas. I think he always plays some slimy. You know, he was a show called A Killing. In the third season where he was a slimy cop and stuff.
But, and I didn't even mention the whole union thing. That's like another wrinkle where you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. It's
another plot thing that got in the way. Didn't really do anything.
Right. Like, another opportunity to have, like, really interesting interactions. Give me that pulpy dialogue or something, but it's just nothing, right?
And Ned Beatty's completely wasted. He has nothing to do.
No. Everybody's just cashing a check.
Yeah, that's it.
He's like, hey, I'm showing up. Yeah. You get me for one day. That's all you get. And then there's some flashback stuff that never really makes any sense. We see his older adopted brother is doing something weird with little kids.
No, that was him that was doing it.
Oh, I thought it was his.
No, it was him. And he blamed it. His his stepbrother got the blame for it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Remember when he says, oh, she would have named anybody you put in front of her. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what they did. So.
Okay, well, look, I was paying attention. I didn't even get that. Yeah. So
he looked young. It's just that the kid in the car looked younger than the other, and he was younger than his brother.
Okay, I thought the opposite.
Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, something weird.
Anyway, yeah. It doesn't matter, right? That's the thing. It wasn't really fully fleshed out. And then it ends with the stupid.
That was the worst ending ever.
It was illogical.
Mm-mm. Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, oh, actually, this woman you thought was dead, she's still alive, so we're going to bring her as we're arresting you. What?
No.
And we're going to let her go embrace you. He stabs her. They shoot him. It's just like, what the hell?
Yeah, he already had, without even knowing, I think he figured out who the witness was. Mm-hmm. I think he figured out she was still alive. Mm-hmm. So he gets his knife ready, puts it up his sleeve, mm-hmm. goes to embrace her, drops the knife in his hand, and stabs her. And then he lights the place on fire. Mm-hmm. Okay, I do have a lingering question. I know we're not there yet. These guys didn't smell the gasoline when they walked in? You walk out of a house that's full of gasoline?
These guys are bad cops. I mean, there
are bad cops. And let's not even forget to mention the worst voiceover that I've heard in a long time in a movie.
What's that?
The voiceover with him talking.
Now, okay, I did like the opening voiceover.
The opening was fine.
When he was like kind of explaining these are the rules of the town. Mm-hmm. That was like, I thought that was the best line. That whole like monologue where he's like, yeah, you catch a man with his pants down, you let him pull him up before you arrest him.
You apologize before you arrest him.
Right. See, you even remember it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The sheriff's office handles the policing for both the city and the county. We do a pretty good job of it to our own way of thinking. We're kind of old-fashioned. Out here, you say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, to anything with the skirt on. Out here, if you catch a man with his pants down, you apologize, even if you have to arrest him afterwards. Out here, you're a man and a gentleman, or you aren't anything at all.
So
but the rest of it was just off. And then they had Kate Hudson reading her letter later on, as if that had ever happened. You know, it was just like, oh. Yeah. But his voice, after a while, it was just like, oh. You know, show a little enthusiasm.
Agreed. So where are we in our little rundown here?
I don't know.
Yeah, so yeah, lines, and I already mentioned that. So who stole it? Okay, so no one, right?
No one.
So Jessica Alba got some heat, right? So she won a Razzie for Worst Supporting Actress.
Really?
Yeah. I think she was terrible. She wasn't good, but I don't know if
she was very good. It was a terrible movie.
Yeah, I'm going to see who her competition was real quick. I mean, she didn't really have much to do.
No.
Right? She's just a...
Well, they had all those shots of them together kind of laughing in bed and doing all this stuff, and then other shots of them having, you know, him tying a belt around her neck while he's, you know, just having weird sex and just...
Wow, this is her competition for Worst Supporting Actress of the Year, ready? Mm-hmm. Okay, so she was against Cher in a movie called Burlesque, which I've never even heard of. Nicola Peltz, which in the last year, I don't know who that is. Barbara Streisand and Little Fockers. Liza Minnelli in Sex and the City 2. And I guess this is why Jessica Alba won. This was her year, you ready? Killer Inside Me, Little Fockers, Valentine's Day. Which is like one of those, like, you know, bunch of people are in it, and it's everyone gets like a couple minutes, and Machete.
Wow, she had a good year. Cashed a lot of checks.
I mean, she's like a billionaire now because she owns like her own beauty product company or something. So she's fine, but so she got some heat. She also got some heat for like she was the winner of. Women's Film Critics Awards. She's the Hall of Shame. I mean, obviously this movie is not great towards women, but that's kind of the whole point, right? So it's like...
Character hates him.
Right, it's like watching Clockwork Orange and going, I'm a little violent, don't you think? It's like, it doesn't make any sense. Let's see. Matt, what would a community college film professor say about this movie, do you think?
Don't watch it. Well, watch it and take notes. What not to do.
Yeah, what are the cautionary tales here, right? Casting is important.
Casting is very important, and the main role in this is not done well.
Okay, so how much? So I was looking up who are the top actors of this year, mm-hmm. this era. So how much better would this movie have been with Joaquin Phoenix?
A lot better.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Yeah, they can both play psycho nice guys.
Matt Damon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Same
Any
thing.
Of those three would have saved the movie.
Right. Yeah. They would have probably spoken up and gone, wait a minute. Let's change this.
Do what?
No. That ending, it was so befitting for this movie, though. Just burn this. This movie.
It was so terrible.
Yeah.
Then I would also say a community college film professor would say there has to be stakes.
Yeah.
Right? We don't, I mean, who cares, right? If this guy, I don't care if this guy gets caught. I don't want him to get caught necessarily. I don't care if he gets away. It's just like, I don't have any vested interest in this person.
Because we don't know anything about anybody, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, I thought that one of the most interesting characters was the sheriff. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just kind of a drunk, been around a lot forever. You know, we don't know anything about him, except he's a drunk.
Yeah.
And he shoots himself.
Could have been Jeff Daniels. Would have been nice. Yeah. So I don't have any lingering questions. I have a lingering comment.
Okay.
Had a pretty good soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's about it.
That's a win, right? Matt, a couple other notes before we wrap this up. Right. I mean, I don't know if you have any final comments about this movie. But no, I would say that we're not alone in our distaste for it. The budget for this movie... estimated $13 million. Opening weekend, $11,000. Gross between worldwide gross. Oh, so gross U.S. and Canada $217,000.
Whoa.
Worldwide gross $4 million. So that's why we didn't see Casey Affleck open a movie until Manchester by the Sea.
Wow, that's pretty bad.
And that's why we didn't see what's his name,
Michael Winterbottom.
John Coran didn't have anything to write. All right, you want to guess the scores? You have any final comments? I don't want to cut you off.
No, just it's horrible. If you're into really horrible movies, you want to. This should be shown in a film class, but not what to do.
Yeah, you got to look at bad examples too, right?
Yeah.
This one. You know what? We had a really good one. And now we have a really bad one. So mm-hmm. I feel like we had some balance here. If there was two stinkers, I would have been pretty bummed out.
Right.
This one is...
Oh, the first one. Oh, yeah. Everybody should see Fireworks. That's,
Matt's
that's a good bad cop.
Matt's final comment about The Killer Inside Me is everyone should see Fireworks. all right. So what do you think? IMDb, we got 34,000 people checking in.
Wow.
6.1.
Oh,
high. That's high.
Too high.
The reason, so I didn't want to watch the Stacey Keach one because it was a 5.9.
Oh, we should have watched that.
But I know. It might also be terrible.
It is terrible, I bet. It's the same story.
Yeah, not all books translate. Okay, now, it's my first time seeing this. Rotten Tomatoes, what do you think? Not the worst one we've ever watched, according to Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm going to go 55.
Nailed it.
Really?
Exactly, 55% on the tomato meter, mm-hmm. 129 reviews. What do you think about the audience?
52.
40.
Oh, that's pretty low.
And I love when the audience score gets so low, mm-hmm. the icon they use is like a dumped over trash can with like what looks like vomit coming out. It's perfect. Let's see if I can pull up a couple quick bad reviews. A vast miscalculation. I like that one. Here we go. The heralded violent scene practically screams, "We need domestic distribution." I don't think anyone in this movie actually likes this movie. That's good. I think that's perfect. I don't think anyone in this movie actually likes this movie. There's nothing better than that, and that's the perfect synopsis.
Right.
All right, and then this is the critics' consensus. You ready?
Yep.
The Killer Inside Me is stylish and beautifully shot. Hard disagree on that one.
No.
It did not seem stylish at all. Did not seem beautifully shot. Mm-mm.
Listen, Michael Winterbottom gets a lot of work, but I don't think he's a great director.
I mean, if you want to see like this part of the world, go watch Hell and High Water.
Right.
That's,
oh yeah,
that's
a lot better
shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, but Michael Winterbottom's distance from his characters robs this often brutally violent film of crucial emotional context.
Yeah, exactly. It had no emotions in it at all.
Right. It's just like, right, again, there's no stakes. You don't know anything about these people. But
no.
Unlike Fireworks, where all that stuff doesn't matter because it's so visually interesting and the main guy carries it, mm-hmm. Casey Affleck can't do that. You know, maybe it's not a fault to him. Maybe it's a script thing. But yeah, it's just, this movie was a big no.
Yes.
All right, Matt. Next week, there might not be a show next week
because
I'll be in Florida. We'll see. So, maybe we'll do it over Zoom. Not sure.
Yeah.
Kind of depends on
timing.
Yeah. But the next show, whenever that is, we'll be doing
gambling
casino movies, right?
Casino movies.
I'll have you watch Croupier, which is on Netflix, Clive Owen.
And I'm going to have you watch Molly's Game with, what's her name? Can't remember.
Jessica Chastain?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
Let's get out of here.
See ya.
Peace.
Bye.
He's a Philistine.
What's a Philistine?
It's a guy who doesn't care about books or interesting films and things.
Then I'm a Philistine.
No, you're interested in books and things.
No, I'm a Philistine.
You've been shitting in my yard.
I have not.
You want me to hold the chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
So, Jane, what you do here in effect is count boners.
It's fun.